Got me? Yeah, good. So, thank you for coming along to this Tech Ed session. You're the rare person that comes along to a licensing session at Tech Ed. So congratulations for that. And we're actually the licensing team. There's quite a few of us here in the room, so I have some expert backup, which is nice. And our goal with this session is just to provide enough information on some of our licensing concepts, especially the newer ones, that as IT people, you know, you maybe get some fresh ideas about what you can do, you know, within the licensing as it stands today. So it's all about giving you enough knowledge that as you're thinking through projects, you know, we'll basically give you at least a good grounding in how the for this talk mainly server side licensing. And hopefully we'll finish up with good time for some Q&A, which also for some people might be a coffee break. But we actually will have a little pop quiz at the end as well. Got a couple of bags and things. The very exciting licensing calculator. Because with licensing, right, you have to add things up. You know, it has to be accurate. So that's a little bit of preamble. I think the right thing for this is let me move quickly through the formal presentation, because that way I can be sure that everyone here has got the basic concepts and the basic information. Some of the slides are a little dense. I'm not going to try and talk to all the points, because you can get these slides as part of the show as reference material. So, you know, I won't be going through every minutiae. And then, you know, again, hopefully we'll wrap up with enough time to have some discussion. We've run this now for a couple of years here at TechEd, and what we found is we have a booth down in the main hall, so do feel free to come by with your own personal questions about your company, your organization, and your licensing. We can, you know, we've got a bunch of people from HQ that are, you know, they write this stuff for a living, so we can hopefully address your questions. And then, you know, in this session, same, you know, often people have questions that are either on the topic or off the topic that are, you know, pretty interesting to most people. All right, without further ado, let me find my clicker. Yeah, my name incidentally is Mark Croft. I'm a bit trapped behind this podium here, which I don't really like, but anyway, we'll try here maybe. Yes, and I'm going to fall off now. So, my name's Mark Croft, and I work up in Redmond. There's a little gang of my colleagues dotted about, and they're also from Redmond. Yes. And so we've come here in force, so I've got the backup. And yeah, we actually have a whole licensing division worldwide. It's about 500 people, which is kind of scary. But all they do is help, you know, explain licensing to you guys, and, you know, come back and try and explain the licensing to us as well, so we can keep updating this stuff. And what you'll see today is I'm trying to summarize probably our largest licensing changes in the last 12 months. Yeah, so our licensing does slowly, you know, it evolves, it gets better, hopefully. That's what we're going to cover. You know, and like thematically, it wasn't hard to choose a theme to try and tie this all together for this show. We've really hinged it around the licensing basics for the private cloud, server side, data center, hosting, public cloud, private cloud. That's the area we're going to be traveling. And, you know, we're just trying to, like, make sure we're aligning with some of the things you're probably hearing in the more technical product sessions around, you know, how to actually plan and design and deploy this stuff. This is the bit about, yeah, how do you actually buy it? How do you know you're within your entitlements from a licensing point of view? I expect this comes up in, you know, a lot of the talks. People do the preamble. Really, from a licensing point of view, what we're trying to show today is how you can take either existing or new licenses, and deploy those licenses in, you know, not just the classical on-premise way on a piece of hardware, but virtualize it, move it, host it, and put it in a public or private cloud. That's really what we're trying to do. And typically, you know, most customers are somewhere on one of these three buckets. They're really thinking, that's why I'm doing this. Yeah, that's the driver. Honestly, from a licensing point of view, we're not trying to second guess your business case here. We're just trying to make sure that you've got the licensing to do this. And like one important concept I want to make here from a licensing point of view, you probably get this from some of my colleagues on the product groups, but, you know, actually, let's just do this. Who here, show of hands, who here has an environment where you've got more than, say, let's say 1,000 employees or users out in your organization? Show of hands. Okay, so it is the majority. It's not everyone, actually. It's about probably about 2/3, just show of hands. And like, what I'm really getting at here, the reason I ask that question is, we have a pretty, from a licensing point of view, we have a pretty strong conviction that most customers aren't going to stampede to the cloud. You know, it's not like today you're in it, you know, and yesterday you weren't. We see most people taking a systematic, thoughtful, planful approach to it. And therefore, if you take that as a thing, they're going to end up with one foot in the cloud, whatever that means, and one foot on-prem. So this that leads me to this word hybrid. And what we're trying to do with our licensing is evolve our licensing so it actually copes with a hybrid environment where some of your products, you know, Windows Server, SQL, you know, will be running, you know, the way they run 5 years ago on-prem, on dedicated hardware. Others might not. They might be virtualized and might be running on someone else's hardware. We're trying to design the licensing to cope with that so that it's not a barrier to some of these different sort of cloud deployments. So that's that concept of hybrid. And like, again, in licensing, we're trying to like essentially bend our old licensing and really make it work for hybrid licensing and cloud licensing. So it's less of an either or, you know, it's a cloud license or it's an on-prem license. It's more like our product licensing and our programs that wrap around the products are fit for both. Now, I'm actually not here to sell you our individual technologies, but, you know, we do have an increasing portfolio of products that are, you know, that are built for both worlds, you know, on-prem and now in the cloud, and, you know, management tools to go around that with System Center and Vert tools with things like Hyper-V. I think the thing I did want to make from a Microsoft point of view, you know, supersetting the licensing, is that we're able to do this, I think, by trying to have a pretty common approach to things like security and management. And that does come through in some of the licensing you'll see today, like with System Center, the ability to use System Center, if you choose it as your management tool or part of your management portfolio, use it for those on-prem instances, and also use it for hosting instances as well, from the same tool, same pane of glass, without needing to buy another license. So that's an example of how we're trying to make some of this sort of strategy stuff at the product level and the API level and the developer level work at the licensing level. So I am going to do a little advert here for the thing that that my division looks after, the enterprise agreement. It's got this big heavy word enterprise in it. What I wanted to make clear here was the enterprise agreement starts at 250 users or devices. And I do mean users or devices, not just devices. You can have a user-based EA. So I know I asked the question, like, who here has 1,000 devices or users out in their organization? But 250 is where this thing starts. So if there's some of you sitting there sitting on Select or Select Plus thinking, you know, that's all you can do, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's very much a buy-as-you-go setup, then the EA is probably worth a look. And we retooled the EA substantially. We basically redesigned the terms and conditions substantially about a year ago. But of course, you know, most people, these EAs are typically 3-year agreements. So most people, you know, it's not something you wake up and suddenly go up to our website and learn this stuff. I wanted to remind everyone of that. And when we did that, these are some of the, if you will, the customer sort of benefits we were trying to tease out relative to the old classical EA. So deployment choice, and what I mean by deployment choice here is the ability to deploy the licenses into different types of environment, virtualized, private, hosted, public. The flexibility of our products and services, most customers just use the EA as a one-stop shop for buying whatever Microsoft technology they need, and in so doing, they achieve the best company-wide price by doing that. Cloud ready when you are, that's really, you know, one of the themes behind this talk. You know, like, we don't care when you move a license to, say, a hosted environment or when you transition people from office on-prem to office in the cloud. From a licensing point, it doesn't matter. You can do it whenever you want under the agreement. Value. This is the bedrock of the EA. At the end of the day, if you're making a commitment to using our technology server-side or desktop-side across more than a substantial amount of your enterprise, of your business, then you're going to basically get the best net price from Microsoft. And then move between. What that really means is, for larger companies especially, you know, if you go to some cloud-hosted app with Azure or Office 365, and you know what, it doesn't work out, or you change the business, or you sell it, whatever, you can come back on-prem as well. And that's kind of one of these benefits of the EA. It's like this umbrella, so you can kind of move things around underneath it. And for those of you that are familiar with the EA construct, essentially, you can do that whenever you like in the IT shop. And if you like, there's an annual process, an anniversary, where if you like, the books are balanced depending what you've bought, depending where things are running now. That's how that all gets reconciled. And then lastly, even though the EA itself is a fairly, you know, fairly weighty set of documents, by the time you've added in different amendments and whatnot, the fact is it's still one agreement. It's one master agreement. And often from a procurement point of view, it's easier to work like that than have a lot of different Microsoft agreements spread around your organization. The biggest problem there tending to be that you let departments buy on their own. They will not typically get the best price. So that's just a brief summary of the EA in my little advert for it there. But truly, you know, once you get above 250, for the majority of customers, it is, you know, both arguably, once you've got through the upfront contracts, the simplest, but also the most affordable way to get Microsoft technology. And I mean, you know, cloud and on-prem in this case. So you'll probably see some version of this slide in other sessions, and I'm dangerously getting outside of my subject matter here by putting in some of these technical terms. The only point I wanted to do here was land a couple of key points. If you are using SQL, and you plan to use SQL in future, SQL 2012, and I'm sure you can learn about it in depth here. Key point was, we'd long had processor-based licensing for the high-end SKU of SQL. Now we have core-based licensing, which is the same principle, same approach, as our Oracle and IBM. So I just wanted to land that fact, because it will affect how you're planning, right? And just so that people know, I'll cover it in a little more detail, but the background to that is we basically felt that cores is becoming just the industry standard unit of measure for database processing. I'm really talking about our online transaction here and tier one. And we needed to move to standardize on that as well. If you're sitting there thinking, my word, what's that mean for me? Rule of thumb, for every core-based SQL licensed, you can think of a four-core processor will license cost out at roughly the same price as a single pro license. So think of a rough ratio, conversion ratio of 4-1 as a planning guideline. That will work for you, which we think was, given the way hardware shipping today, a reasonable sort of benchmark in terms of throwing the change over. But then on the infrastructure side, and that's the point I'm trying to make here, workloads, different licensing basis from infrastructure. On infrastructure, we're firmly still committed to a PROC-based approach, processor-based approach, to the unlimited virtualization products, which I'll be covering in a minute. So that's really just to tie apart that, like, you know, no matter what you're doing, typically we just have a PROC-based approach to infra, and a more core-based approach that's coming out on the application workload side. So licensing can get pretty dry and pretty hard to absorb, right? You know, and like lots of charts with SKUs and, you know, different features and numbers on them. One thing we wanted to do with this session was just try a little bit of like using an example. And we have this mythical company, Contoso. And today, Contoso is being a retailer. And, you know, like, let's imagine, you know, medium-sized retailer, 5,000 employees. Yeah, bunch of stores in the US, bunch of stores in Europe. And, you know, let's look at their infrastructure here. You know, US HQ, 50 servers, you know, 2,000 PCs. And, yeah, we've got a 5,000 employee thing here. Bunch of a regional office in Europe and then a bunch of stores. And really what I'm going to do here is just walk through some of the steps that this company might have made in order to clean up their environment. And so, yeah, basically, you know, reduce some costs and centralize and virtualize some of their applications. So just hold that in your head. There won't be a test on the exact numbers here, but it's just to try and breathe some license to how they apply the licensing. So step one in this story, this scenario we wanted to go through, was, you know, the IT department, you know, they're under, you know, they've been instructed, like, hey, can you please do some cost reduction here? Can you streamline some of our infrastructure? By the way, you know, we really need to get much more efficient about rolling out changes, software changes to the stores. And lastly, you know, the store managers really need some BI that they don't have. You know, we get the tilde point of sale transaction data back, but, you know, we want to give the store managers some insights as to what's going on locally. So those three things were, like, you know, sort of an imperative, if you will, on the IT department. Not too shocking. and probably some variation of which, you know, you're all having to deal with today as well in your own industry. So the first thing they wanted to do here was, let's assume, and of course I'm assuming these guys are primarily a Microsoft shop here, so let's assume that, you know, they standardize around Windows Server. And the big thing they can do is really, you probably saw if you work in retail, you know, they were pretty heavily servered out at the store level. And retail, real tough store environment in terms of margins. So, you know, the idea here is aging hardware. They didn't want to replace a bunch of that hardware. So they virtualized and pulled back some of the store applications to HQ, just leaving basically the store processing to being the till transactions and some very, some basic BI, basic productivity. So that's what happened here. And that's easily achieved with the Windows Server licensing. The only thing you have to consider is like, what's, if you are buying these licenses from scratch, what's the right actual SKU, the actual version that you wanna buy, so that you're not, you know, overbuying and not underbuying relative to the virtualization. Yeah. So these are our infrastructure building blocks. These are the two lean products here, and. Really, from a licensing point of view, all I wanted you all to walk out of here with was understanding that depending how much you virtualize really just decides the license that you're going to buy, the product type you're going to buy. And I'll show that on the next slide. And that applies to System Center and Windows Server. And increasingly, our product team, I think wisely, have started moving away from differentiating the different products and the price based on features and just pivoting around essentially the degree of virtualization, which makes it a much easier decision from an IT point of view in terms of, you know, which of these products you're going to buy. Here's just a brief summary of Windows Server R2. This has been in market for a few years now. I'm sure you're all well aware we're in the beta phase of the next version of Windows Server. I'm not going to be sharing any net new news on the Windows Server licensing, but I will say that you can expect it to broadly follow the shape of the System Center licensing. So there's some consistency between the System Center and the Windows Server licensing, more than you see today. But here you can see here this Windows Server following this example of really just the degree of virtualization. So you pay more, but you get more vert, right? And in a retail environment, I'd absolutely expect to see a pretty careful approach to which edition they used at store level, right? So, having four VMs in a store necessitating using enterprise, there would be, a lot of pressure to eliminate that and get it back to something like standard so that the store level IT pricing and licensing was more efficient and lower. Now on System Center, so this is newer. You know, we announced this just a few months ago. It's available now, and I really just wanted to summarize this. Who here had some experience using some of our different System Center products prior to this version? A few of you? Okay, about a quarter or so. So the net of it is we had some 17 individual products in market that you could buy a la carte. You could buy them one at a time and use, you know, in some ways it was great because you could be really precise and say, I'll have that component, and, you know, each one came with a license and a price. Off you go. But what we found was pretty complicated for customers. It was tough to see, to manage that portfolio of products and keep them all up to date and together. So now this product group took a very, thoughtful approach to, like, really grouping things up. Essentially now we have two suites. And, you know, you have the standard suite and you have the data center suite. And, you know, when you look at that, the single thing you need to think about is if you're going to virtualize beyond the two VMs, you're going to want data center. That's it. There's no more, you know, complexity to it at the SKU choice level. So, of course, if you're sitting on using just one or two of our prior products, you're probably thinking, oh, wow, can I get away with standard edition? Do I need data center? And you'll be trying to figure out, okay, I bet that suite costs more than some of the individual components. Those are all valid statements. But in terms of, like, as you plan for the future, you're pivoting around making a choice around these two. Okay. What, do you want to chime in with that one, Bob?
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it is extremely light. I'm with you. I'm with you. I mean, yeah, for us, from a market point of view, it's more like, yeah, we're targeting mid-market primarily. Right? Because most customers will probably be on the right-hand side. You can have two. Yeah, which is new relative to the old editions. Yeah, the stuff I'm presenting here, this is all public domain stuff. So if you're scratching your head about this, there's absolutely a Xeo reference material on, firstly, on our Microsoft.com licensing website, which is really a reference area for a lot of this stuff, and also on System Center's own website as well. So from a planning point of view, and yeah, these new licensing basics are really important. But again, it's really your virtualization choice. There really isn't any other parameter, obviously outside of budget, that will drive that, should drive that. Now, SQL. I wanted to just briefly summarize SQL without getting into deep SQL licensing stuff. But essentially, first thing to note, the editions have changed. The editions are down the left-hand side, three editions. The licensing model for each edition can be different. And really, standard, the entry-level product, you can choose. ServerCal or core-based. Core-based, not proc-based, right? Nothing's proc-based anymore. And then there's a new, brand-new BI product, and the SQL group are very proud of this. I've seen demonstrations, and it looks fantastic to me. But from a licensing point of view, it's a server and cal model. Now, everything in standard is in BI, and then let's move up to the flagship product, Enterprise Edition. So that's for your online transaction processing, your tier one data center, but also includes all the BI functionality. So those SKUs superset as they go up, all right. Everything in BI is in Enterprise. So if you know you've got some tier one, you're getting the BI you're getting the BI included, and that is a core based model now. Right, and again, as I alluded to in the introduction, that's really premeditated on the fact that's the way the database industry is configured, and also means licensing in a virtualized environment, whether we call it vCores or vProcs, depending where the industry goes in terms of terminology, that's going to be the easiest way to actually sort of measure these things, especially in something like a private cloud or hosted cloud environment. And the idea here from, without getting into the rationalizing for the pricing, the idea here from the product group is really for tier one, for data center, it's really like pay for what you use on a core utilization basis. Now that as well, again, I wanted to make the point that that has unlimited vert on the enterprise as well. So similar to the System Center side as well. So that was just a brief taster on, if you like, the product licensing basics. And really, you can think of Microsoft licensing as falling into two zones. There's the licensing around the actual individual product, like System Center or SQL, and then there's the way you can essentially put all of that together and purchase it in bulk, if you will, from Microsoft. And we have these things with this name called enrollments. And the reason I'm highlighting them here is, you can go and buy these licenses, under something like Select or Open, one at a time. And, you just pay a price, and you can add software assurance or not. That's standard. But for many of you, you'll actually get a much better value out of Microsoft if you take one of these enrollments. Essentially, they're a suite-based approach to standardizing in the case of ECI, System Center and Windows Server, and in case of EAP, Enrollment for Application Platforms, SQL and BizTalk primarily, and Visual Studio as well. So I'm mentioning those because people don't really know. We have this lexicon of licensing terminology, and the one on the left, the Enterprise Enrollment, that's the classical desktop EA. You can add on these server products through your desktop EA, through additional products, no problem. But if you're going to deploy a lot of our stuff, and I'll cover the quantities in a minute, then you're better off looking at ECI and EAP, especially for infrastructure. ECI, the threshold for being eligible for an ECI is really, really pretty low, and I'll show that in a second. So again, I'm just calling this out so that you know you've got some, if you don't know about these things, you know these tools are available to, yeah, it's basically you can get more licenses for your budget if you're making, you know, a certain purchase level. And those work underneath something that from a pure procurement terms and conditions point of view is called the enterprise agreement. Yeah, but you can snap these, any combination of these three enrollments can be snapped underneath an EA. And of course, most of the time, everyone just thinks that's Windows and Office and CALS. And what I'm trying to do here is put a little spotlight on these two that are less utilized from a customer point of view, and yet really are the best tools for private cloud licensing. Again, if you're buying one or two licenses, no. But if you're thinking of using our stuff in any kind of heavyweight way over time, then these are probably going to give you the best option. So just to drill into ECI a little deeper, so this is System Center and Windows Server. So there's two different variations of this enrollment, of the ECI enrollment, and essentially, again, it's pivoted around the suite. Meaning, if you're going for the enterprise SKUs, then you can use the data center edition. If you're going for the lower virtualization, then the standard. And again, the majority of customers typically are moving in at the data center level because you know they're committing to this in terms of you know using it extensively in their data center environments. So notice here, right? ECI requires a 25 license minimum initial purchase. Now, for some customers, yeah, 25 is actually a lot. But for a lot of customers, you know, obviously large customers, 25 is actually not that many. And like, it's a complete budget no-brainer to step into an ECI above 25 licenses if you can justify it. Essentially the way ECI works from a pricing point of view, you'll get a better deal than if you buy those products individually through any other licensing program from Microsoft. So that's just a little, you know, little summary on that. Again, there's more reference material on the web. I will just pause here and just ask Bob if there's anything else you wanted to chip in that I'm missing on like the key points here.
Normally, 20% discount is built into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it's a suite approach.
Yeah.
Just with those two. Yeah. Yeah. And then EAP is the parallel. I haven't got a drill down on EAP here, but if you're database centric, if you're SQL centric, you absolutely should evaluate EAP. Same principle. So that's that. Thank you, Bob. So that's just enough, you know, hopefully to give you enough to know whether you should evaluate these further. So let's step up a little bit in terms of scenario. I wanted to summarize how you can use your existing server licenses. By server, I mean, I don't mean Windows Server, I just mean server workloads. Really the application workloads, not the operating system, and use those in a hosted environment. So, you know, I don't want to get into the definition of what's a private cloud, what's a public cloud. What I want to get very precise about is, let's say you take, and in this scenario, what we're saying is Contoso, You know, they brought a bunch of this workload back out of the stores, put it in the HQ. It's sitting in their data center hardware. You know, and like, they're strapped for capacity. They don't want to buy new hardware. They want to offload something. Now, in this case, we're just assuming, let's say they want to satisfy that goal of giving the store managers a bunch of BI, i.e. access to a snapshot of the SQL database, the production database, the OLTP database. Well, what they decided is they just run a batch job on SQL every night, throw that database instance over to a third-party hoster, right? How can they license that? Now, if I was doing this talk before May of last year, I'd have been saying to you, you need to like essentially negotiate with the hoster who essentially will sell you another version of SQL through service provider licensing. Because obviously, we have a bunch of licensing that you guys don't see that is directly to hosters. But, what we did last year, as long as you have software assurance on any of these app server workloads, and I mean Exchange, SharePoint, SQL, Link, System Center, not the operating system, but anything that runs above the hardware layer, above the hypervisor layer, you can move that license. You can physically entitle it to a hoster of your choice, and there's no additional licensing compliance or cost from Microsoft. Okay, so you can go to your local hoster in country or outside, doesn't matter where in the world they are, and essentially negotiate, the price they'll give you for running a bunch of VMs. You can take your on-prem Microsoft licensing and have the hoster run those licenses. And it's a way of trying to make sure you're never paying twice essentially for the same functionality you've already licensed from Microsoft. I've got a question down here in the front.
Right.
That's a great question. So the question is, the enabler, the licensing enabler for this scenario is having software assurance. It's a reason to consider putting software assurance on your app server workloads, right? And if you think you're going to do this, beyond the new version rights that we've always had in the planning services and training and so forth. So the question was, what if SA is dropped? And if SA is dropped, then I'm not intimate with the literal T's and C's, but essentially you will be out of compliance at that point. At which case you could then go back to the service provider and say, hey, give me a quote for the hoster, basically providing the same licenses but through service provider. That's what you would have to do, which would obviously be an incremental cost at that point.
So it's been in effect at that point, then the licenses revert to
on-prem. Yeah, just as they were if it was an L only. It would default back to the L only because essentially your SA is like it's not literally a subscription, but essentially it's either in place or not in place. Make clear? So, and again, I just want to, again, just some, oh, sorry, another question down front here. Ooh. So the question from the front here was, what can we do this license mobility with MSDN licenses? And I'm going to do a very rapid redirect to Bob to see if I know. I don't know the answer to that.
With MSDN?
Yeah.
I'd have to check on that one myself. Yeah, I can't answer that one off the top of my head.
So it's a good question. Yeah. So make sure I either come right around our booth at the back, the Connect Zone, or come up afterwards and we'll grab your business card. And
yeah, we'll get an answer to that question for you.
I would expect that's a subscription. It's not an L plus SA.
MSDN is, as a program.
But we're going to have the same problem. That's a really...
Key thing.
Important use case because the developers are actually going to be some of the first people to be fooling around with this stuff. And their assumption is if they've got the right MSDN license,
then they're good to go.
And I think all the qualifying types of licenses for that are listed specifically in I think either the product use rights or the product list, which are two public
facing documents you can find on the volume licensing website. We'll look at that when you come to our booth.
If you want to come by the Connect Zone, we'll physically try and look it up on the booth as well.
I actually last week tried to find information about this. Yeah. Looking under license mobility.
No.
I couldn't find any customer available documents at all. I got referenced to a bunch of LAR information that I didn't have rights to get to.
Yeah.
Information, but there wasn't any customer stuff that I could find.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's it's our team's job actually to provide that documentation to you. So that's great feedback because another part of my team deals with the service provider side, and we've put a lot of energy into making sure the hosters know what to do.
Right.
It sounds like we could use like a white paper, right? Something like that on license. Yeah, customer facing.
I actually even read the new EA. I couldn't make sense of what the new EA said in this space. So.
Yeah, so we have a gentleman here, Randy, that will be available in the Connect Zone after, and he's going to look that up during the session and make sure that we have an answer.
Randy,
so if you know where the Connect Zone is, it's right in front of where the keynote area is. So the licensing has a booth there. Sorry for not knowing now.
Yeah.
And also, I just wanted to say we're recording this session, so for the benefit of people joining after, if you have a question, if you don't mind standing up and using the mic so that we... re-record your question. Thank you.
Great. Okay, good questions, and thank you.
I thought your scenario was very important because we're trying to move our development staff over to virtual machines as well. Are you using a third-party hoster, or are you just planning on using Azure? Because I think it seems Azure would be covered if we use them as the VM host.
Right.
But are you thinking about using a third party?
So right now we have using AWS, Amazon Web Services, and we pay about 60% of the bill to Microsoft licenses. And all those developers already have MSDN subscriptions.
Right.
So I try to find out how we can get costs on that.
Good, thank you. And instantly there was a little comment down here about trying to read the updated EA's T's and C's and needing a PhD. Our goal with this session is to get it off doctorate level down to Master of Science, just so as you know. Yeah, that's our aspiration. So,
probably would be able to read
but,
it down.
Yeah, exactly. But I think most people here could cope with Masters, if not PhD. A serious point is most of the team here, we spend a lot of our time working with the policy and contracts people to try and simplify the stuff that's actually in the actual contracts, but also to do the abstract so that you can get enough from things that are easy to digest rather than having to decode our T's and C's.
For the record, those white papers are often very, very good explaining things. So
well, thank you.
Keep up the good work. Those are important.
I appreciate you saying it because Randy here, he's written a good few of them. Thank you. Here's a summary of that, notwithstanding the MSDN point, which is a great question. So again, my goal here was to make sure everyone walks out understanding the concept. And really, in a way, what we're saying is, and this applies to existing licenses you have with SA and anything new as well. So it's retroactive and forward-looking. So it was an important change last year that we're still trying to communicate to folks. So I'm on to the last leg of the presentation, if you will. So I just want to summarize what's going on with public cloud. So when I say public cloud in Microsoft speak, that's really let's say you want to give some workload, some IT, to Microsoft's hosting, essentially. Yeah, public cloud, essentially not just our local hoster, but something that's truly at the worldwide public level. And the scenario I'm going to use here with our friendly retailer is they've not been able to provision store staff with Office. And I know from working with retailers, that's a very, very common scenario, right? Having a standardized approach to Office at the store level is a big, because of course the stores multiply out. We've got 100 just for the scenario, right? That's a lot of money for a store level operation. So what I wanted to do here is the business would like the store people to actually, have some email, maybe some SharePoint access, but what can they do that if they don't want to do a full desktop EA across all of every employee? And of course they probably have shift workers. They probably have temporary and seasonal staff. Things that again from the desktop EA wasn't configured around, volatile user environments, and here I'm going to just describe one way to kind of finesse this from an IT and a business point of view. And in a retailer, obviously, probably this is, they've probably got a lot of temporary staff coming on holiday and back to school in the US. And yeah, how do you cope with that? So the idea here is, you know, without having to like clog up the main data center in the US or in Europe, they could choose to use, you know, some Office 365 here. The thing I wanted to say about Office 365 is that if they took this as far as substituting out true information workers, i.e. people that they'd already licensed with Office, they can actually swap those on-premise licenses under the EA for an E2, E3, or E4 subscription. And I'll cover what that jargon means in a session. So what I'm saying there is it's not just an additive thing under the EA. Depending on the actual subscription, the actual plan you're using, you know, you can actually do some smart things to, like, you know, without essentially, you know, paying again for Office functionality, use your EA to move people, like, over time from an on-prem Office world to an Office subscription world with Office 365. That's one point. And then the other point is, obviously, for the first time with Office 365, Microsoft basically started offering to commercial customers a different set of functionality with a different monthly price for different types of user. And those are called plans, incidentally, in the Office 365 world. And there's six of them, right? So you can actually get pretty sophisticated if you wanted to about grouping your users up by functionality. And then, yeah, the news here essentially is we now have a couple of plans, they're called K plans, that really are probably, you know, there'll be a good enough ROI that you provision store level people in a retail environment or manufacturing in a, you know, in a shop floor environment with these plans, because you're looking at a starting point, you know, pre all the EA sort of pricing algorithms. You're looking at something like $4 to $6 a user per month. Well, that's very different from a couple of hundred a year for a full, you know, office desktop, right? So that's the other thing I wanted to just, you know, make that point here. So just for a couple of minutes, I'll just put these up here. You know, here's the one-stop shop in terms of what Office 365 is trying to be from a value point of view. What's it trying to bring? And then I'll move rapidly on and just say, you know, what they wanted to do here was, you know, slowly move people under their existing licensing to E3. That's the sort of the information workers, the people already legitimately licensed for Office, and then add these new staff at store level to these seasonal workers or these temporary workers. You know, and obviously there's a lot of coming and going and hiring and whatnot at turnover at the store level. Well, these K1, K2 plans are a suitable tool for that. So what are these plans? I've got two slides here. They're four E plans, right? And I'm not going to go through it again. This is more reference material, just to know. You can grab this slide deck or look on Microsoft.com licensing to find this. And you can see, you know, broadly speaking, E3 is functionally equivalent to a well-implemented desktop and server Microsoft Office environment, meaning Exchange, SharePoint, you know, that are working. Now, one of the things we're always hearing from customers is, man, it's really hard to deploy Windows and Office. You know, meaning touching PCs, deploying that stuff, locking it down. You know, it's a ton of work for the IT department. And one of the things we wanted to highlight here for this Contoso example is, you know, if they bought a bunch of stores in Europe, they could snap these folk into Office 365 in a matter of weeks, right? Because it's just signing up subscriptions. You know, it's not needing a big planning exercise on the desktop or in the data center for this existing company. So in some ways, it can be an effective tool to, like, rapidly onboard people as well, irrespective of whether, you know, you've got a cloud strategy or an on-prem strategy, right? It's got some other attributes that can make it attractive. So that's the Exchange side, the E side. And then these other plans that I wanted to call out, especially, you know, I'm using retail just to shine a light on it. But, you know, we've got these K plans. And, you know, I'm sure for everyone in this room, you know, if you had just had a K plan, you'd probably be a little disappointed, because you're probably all pretty sophisticated in one way or another, office users, Exchange users and whatnot, SharePoint maybe even. But for a guy that or a gal that has nothing at a store, this is a whole lot better than nothing from a company productivity point of view. So that was just to, like, put this last sort of scenario here around public cloud. Now, one thing I deliberately didn't try and put into this presentation, partly because of time. We've got about 30 minutes left. but and we started a little late, so probably 25 or so. But I didn't put Azure in here. And that's partly also because last week, if any of you were looking at Azure, they've made some, the business group, the product group, made some pretty substantial changes to the scope of Azure around the VM role and around cross-play, the ability to basically install different OSs as well beyond just the Microsoft platform. So that's that would be the last chunk of this, just to like completely sort of end the whole cloud area from a main Microsoft product point of view. But that's at least the server side, private cloud, Windows Server, System Center, SQL, and now just this this quick sort of glimpse at what how you can use Office 365 public cloud. One thing I think I've made this point, and the I wanted to make this point again, which is how do you get there? Public cloud. It's not again. It's not like you suddenly make this decision and then suddenly turn people on to Office 365. What I wanted to show here for these 5,000 employees in Contoso, you can take an extremely practical approach to snapping different departments or different regions in to Office 365 over time underneath the EA. And all of these folk that went over on E3, essentially you're cash neutral from a Microsoft licensing point of view on that transition, right? You're only going to end up owing us money for like net new subscriptions for either new employees beyond your Office desktop commitment or for these K licenses at the store level that didn't exist before. So this is just trying to say, from a licensing point of view, it's really, you can approach this underneath that umbrella agreement, as you need to from a quantity. And indeed, it's not shown here, but you can reverse people back on-prem should you want to do so as well. Okay. So there's just a brief recap of the EA here. Sorry, you got a question, sorry.
Yeah, it was actually on the last two slides. I just want to confirm, are you saying that if you are currently licensed for a set of products through an EA on-prem, you can move to O365 with the matching set of products at no extra cost if the product set is directly aligned to the plan?
That's correct.
So there's no extra cost for all the Office 365 infrastructure that's behind the covers, behind the scenes?
It's already priced into the subscription. And if you like, we know the tipping point for us is E2, actually, from an EA point of view. Like what I'm saying here, just to be blunt, you cannot swap an existing Office 2010 Pro Plus license for E1. But you can swap that license essentially in mid-agreement for an E2, E3, or E4. If it's E4, you'll owe us a little bit of money because that's got a bunch of linked stuff and on top.
But if you had, if you had Exchange, SharePoint, mm-hmm. or just say you got CoreCal, you can just go straight over.
Yeah, and of course that's exactly what you're alluding to. That's, we're taking, it's our infrastructure, our service level agreement, our patching, our deployment. Exactly right. That was really the core thing that we redesigned under the EA to make that feasible, possible, about a year ago.
Yeah.
For you, the CoreCal, you said you have CoreCal?
Well, we have the equivalent. We have all the individual products.
Okay, so you essentially have the CoreCal. So it's a standard transition, which is the technical term, to E2.
With CoreCal, okay.
It maps exactly to it.
Thanks, John. Yeah, so thank you for getting me to be real precise on that, because really that, outside of all the figuring out the plans, from a licensing point of view, if you're an EA customer, that was the big news here, right? The reason we did this is, we think Office 365 is going to be great for some of our customers over time, and yet, if you've already essentially paid for Office inside your EA, you're going to look at this and go, hey, why am I, I'm kind of doing this again here, just on a subscription basis. This was to really make sure it was, licensing and price neutral from a functionality to functionality point of view. The same, incidentally, I haven't focused on it here, but just for complete information, the same principle applies to Windows Intune as well. I think I was here. And I talked about, you know, under the 3 years, you know, you can really, you know, move people along at your own pace. Here's a summary of where I came in around the EA. And hopefully now some of these points around the EA, some of these 6 points, there's a little more reality from this talk about what those 6 points mean. And then, you know, just bringing it back to this scenario, you know, what we're trying to show here from a licensing point of view for Contoso and, you know, an EA customer was, you know, that they, you know, with their EA licensing and some of the product licensing underneath it, you know, they were able to, you know, to achieve some of these priorities they had to get done. So with that, you know, notwithstanding the dauntingness of having to, you know, spend your time on licensing. But for many of us, it is a necessary thing to, you know, to understand enough to know, to, you know, to know what's possible and to make sure you're making the right, you know, licensing and purchasing decisions. We do have some resources here. Now, that licensing website, you know, we're in the middle of redesigning that to make it more accessible. We actually have quite a treasure trove of white papers and VL briefs that one of the attendees mentioned, and we're trying to do a better job to surface that so it's easier to discover. But our goal with Microsoft, our approach to licensing is, if you will, not to leave stuff kind of murky and veiled. We're actually on a policy basis trying to make sure you can actually find everything you need to, notwithstanding MSDN questions and the licensability, which is incidentally, that's the sort of feedback we want, so we'll patch those gaps. So I will point you to that resource there. Now, of course, many of you are able to go and work with your licensing partner, your reseller, or your LAR. That's just fine. They are supposed to be experts on all this as well. I mean, that is, you know, essentially, we have an arrangement where them, as part of their role to you, they are supposed to know all of this. So if they don't, you should be thinking about that. But they are supposed to. You know, like, what I'm seeing from customers generally, myself and my colleagues, is a lot of customers increasingly, you know, just want to know enough that they know they're making the right investment choices, right? So that's why we're on a, you know, we're not just redirecting you to the partner, we're trying to provide complete line of sight on all of our licensing, you know, which, of course, some of it does, on things like virtualization, some of it can get technical, or complex, I should say. One other little advertisement for TechEd. Later on today, Deb, what time have we got?
4 p.m.
At 4 p.m., we have a essentially a classroom type environment where if you've got the appetite and the stamina, you'll get another level of knowledge around Windows Server and System Center licensing at 4 p.m. today. And where are we hosting that, Deb?
So that's in the workshop area. And what we have during that session as well, Bob will be delivering that session. We're actually going to have an accreditation program. So we're announcing a new licensing expert accreditation program for customers. We're going to be posting training here locally at TechEd, so you could actually go through the certification and you'll be then eligible to get into a drawing. We're giving away several Xbox 360 Star Wars editions with Kinect, so they're super cool. So you can either go to the workshop at 4 p.m., which is down in the workshop area near the hands-on lab. We also have a hands-on lab running. You just need to get your test code and give it to us at the Kinect zone. And then lastly, if for some reason you don't have time when you're here, there's a site called Microsoft Virtual Academy where we're also running those courses online. And you can slowly see more courses becoming available. So if you do have interest in becoming a licensing expert, you can actually go through the full accreditation. So we're going to keep investing on making sure our customers have the latest information on licensing.
And if you come by our booth without too much hard work, you can get a sticker. Yeah. This is where, you know, this is like, you know, we're all about the traditional stuff here in licensing, right? Calculator, sticker. What more could you want?
So I just want to also state, as we have a number of people, as Mark said, that are here. We left ample time for questions in case you have some very specific ones. You can either share those publicly and then please use the microphones. And if you have some questions that you want to ask that are more really account specific, please come by the Kinect Zone. We'll be here all week.
Right. And just before we get into Q&A, let's have a bit of fun to close. Firstly, the only reason our licensing team is at TechEd is because we last year, the year before, we got you know, reasonable attendance. And I'm actually less worried about the number of people filling all the seats. I mean, that's great if a lot of people come. But with this, we're like, what have we got, 30 people here maybe? That's actually a nice size audience because it can be a little more interactive than a filled stadium. But we do make a decision about attendance based on evals. You know, like, because if this session's just, you know, blowing past you and, you know, you'd rather be somewhere else, we need to know that. So please, before you race for the door, we really would appreciate the eval back because, in terms of, you know, just the simple decision of, like, deciding to come here and staff it, it's not as trivial as it might sound. You know, we're not one of the product groups. We choose to come here and we choose to pay to come here and be part of TechEd. So your feedback's actually important in terms of, making us think about this for next year.
There was a number of people roaming the halls that couldn't find this room.
So we were just between us in the room, and I know the organizers have a terribly complex job at TechEd, we were extremely disappointed about the room change and the snafu. I think two talks were booked into the same room, and we didn't see it until this morning, because why would we? We're just presenters.
The people at the door didn't know where you were.
No. I know. We did send someone down just before one of our people's down was down there to do the redirect, but I'm with you. So we're really not happy with that.
We're glad you found us.
Yeah, we're glad you guys found us.
And thank goodness for signs up front.
Yeah. So good point. So let's have a bit of fun here. I've actually got outside of the extremely valuable calculator and sticker, we actually have these rather nice. You know, and discreetly logoed, volume licensing bags, right? Microsoft volume licensing. You know, I mean, it's a badge of honor, honestly, it is, to carry one of these. They're very rare. You can't find them on eBay yet. You can't, can you? I haven't put mine up there. And so I was going to do, let's have a bit of fun. I've got two of them. Well, if I'd known, like, if we'd filled this room, that would have blown our cost budget for the year. But we, you know, given the attendees, we probably could have done something. Just didn't know. But for this, why don't we do a little pop quiz, right? So it's the first person to put their hand in the air and have the right answer. But I'll warn you, the first one is super simple. So, you know, if you haven't had coffee, get the white muscle twitch going. And I'm going to rely. You're going to have to rely on my pretty bad eyesight here. Are you going to? You're going to be okay. We're going to use Deb as being the decider of the person. So quite. Yeah, I like your style. All right. Yeah, I know at least half. Do you know the answer to this? I'm wondering about changing the question in my head, but then I'll probably ask something I don't know the answer to. So, what is the standard length of a Microsoft Enterprise Agreement?
I would
say, three years. I think you were just a microsecond in front of a few other folks, so congrats.
It's a really, really hard one.
All right, here comes, ask and you shall receive. Something about MSDN? Yeah, then we won't be able to give it to anyone, right? Yeah, including the Microsoft people. All right, I'm gonna ask you one that I'm pretty familiar with, but depending how you define it, you can argue for a slight. Yeah, I've got an answer I know in my head, and I really do. And I know true experts here can pick this apart a little bit, but I'm gonna go with it anyway because it's clean. This one's harder. How many individual software assurance benefits are there in the software assurance program today? So your SA benefits, so license mobility is one, new version rights is another, spread payments is another, right? How many in total is, you know, if you added them all up, how many individual benefits?
I'm going to guess 12.
No, but nice guess. Oh, that's really close.
I'll guess 17.
Oh, he got it. Yeah. Now, 17. Nice one. Good one. And well done, the other two gentlemen, for like basically setting the trend there. They're time lucky. 17. Yeah. We're not going to have one that says list them, okay? I might be able to do that. I might not. So formally, in terms of the main talk, thank you for Abe showing up and, you know, coping with the room snafu. And also now, I think we have got about 15 minutes left. Maybe at this point, you know, if you've got Q&A, if you've got something super detailed about your agreement, maybe catch us on the stand. But if you've got more like just, you know, on topic, broadly interesting questions, have at it. We've got, say, 4 or 5 people here in the room that can cope with most things. And thank you very much.
I have a question you probably don't want to answer, and I'm going to try to ask it in a way you can.
Now I'm worried.
Will we know what the licensing for Server 2012 is before the end of calendar 2012?
Before the end of calendar?
Calendar 2012.
Yes.
Okay.
We currently license MDOP. And with the asset inventory service, which I've been told is going away and it's going to be Intune, is there going to be anything that's granted to us at all through our EA since we've been have the MDOP and it's...
So you
have an EA? We have an EA, yes.
Yeah, so you get granted an Intune seat for each MDOP seat that you have.
Okay. And in this EA?
In this
current,
what?
Our current EA?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can show you the language if you want to show you exactly what you get.
Okay.
Just see me after.
Okay, thank you.
You skipped the part I'm actually here for, the Azure. The Azure guys always say pay as you go to tune up, tune down performance. How are you licensing that? If I have a server with, I use 2 cores for my system. Normally, but during invoicing, I use 10 cores for 4 hours. How do I pay for that?
Right. Was that about? Were you asking about Azure specifically, which products were you most interested in?
Yeah, for SQL Server, for instance.
Okay.
But meaning I use that in a hosted environment, in the cloud, public cloud.
Right. It's a workload question. I mean, I would say our policy is that you're supposed to be licensed for the maximum. I mean, I'm just giving you the policy. And I just to be more candid on it, we totally hear more and more feedback about, you know, licensing that is more adaptable to workload, you know, and actual, you know, peaks and troughs. The thing we have that we're still learning from in market today, from a customer point of view, our nearest in terms of figuring out how to change the licensing to be more, you know, literally usage-based is Windows Azure. But that has not come over yet to the on-prem products.
But that answer pretty much breaks down their sales pitch.
Well, on-prem, like let's take, for instance, SQL. It's now we're licensing SQL per core.
Yeah.
You only license the number of cores that you're using in SQL, okay? So you don't have to license them all. You just license and pay for those cores that are utilizing SQL. Okay, so that's a classic kind of pay as you go. And how we've changed licensing, where before, you know, you have to license the entire box, you know, in years past. Now, though it's changed in SQL, it's per core.
But you have to pay for them the whole month, not only there.
Well, now you're talking. Yeah, with the cloud services, I'm not sure exactly how that. My answer was on premise.
Yeah, yeah, and I think what the gentleman here is referring to is metering. You know, in licensing world, we call this metering,
yeah.
And you know, metering's becoming much more visible and available because of the cloud, right? Where, you know, you can, you know, we can give you a monthly report about, you know, proc utilization and gigabytes used, and I think. The problem we're having with metering from an industry point of view, I'm not trying to make just a Microsoft point here, is if we allow invoicing to be based on on all kinds of different hardware attributes or virtual attributes, it actually gets really complicated really quickly. And like there's the theory of it, like you know, invoicing on metering, and then there's the practice of what's the right point at which the metering is fair for both parties. And again, Azure's our main testbed for like figuring that out. And there's no question that we will see more, you know, like essentially usage-based licensing going forward, just to be clear. It's just we're still in the relatively early days of figuring out how to do that in a way that's accurate for both parties and then, you know, can go through the whole invoicing process easily, transparently. So it's a good question. From a licensing trend point of view, it's a big deal.
Thank you.
Can you comment on which virtualization rights are tied to software assurance in the server space?
Right.
We don't have to talk about desktop, but just in the products we're talking about today.
Yeah. Right, and the one for me that's top of mind is, firstly, if you didn't see it on the slide, with System Center, that product now essentially is, you know, includes SA in the licensing price. So that's the virtual. You can argue whether that's SA or not, but that's there. It's also true that SQL on the enterprise SKU, the unlimited vert is an SA entitlement.
So can you back up to System Center? Is System Center unlimited virtualization just require Enterprise Edition license only, or does it require software assurance, or is it not available with license only right now?
Exactly, what you just said.
So, okay, so given that.
Yeah, exactly, it's the same thing.
At the end of the, you could buy L plus SA now, but at the end of the agreement, SA potentially ends. So do you still retain your virtualization rights if you come off of SA for System Center?
System Center is, with the new System Center 2012, software assurance is integral to that product, okay? So
it's not a perpetual license?
It is. It was a perpetual, but to run System Center, to purchase System Center 2012, you have to purchase software assurance with it, okay? So
So let me try to characterize. There's a difference between a perpetual license and a subscription.
Yeah, this is a perpetual license. Okay, so if you get off of it, you know, if you end it, you've got the same rights that you had, you know, when you
Can't buy, you can't buy license only.
Right.
To understand.
You can't buy a license.
But it is
only.
You
but
have to
rights,
buy it with software assurance, but the rights that you get under it
stay for that version of software stay perpetually. You get to keep those same rights.
And I assume that there will be a software assurance SKU in the future.
To renew?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Right. And then back to the original question. So there is something about SQL?
Yeah.
That software assurance, because SQL's got the other model, which is you've still got the L and SA as options.
Well, with SQL, in the Enterprise Edition, is just core-based licensing.
Right. Yeah.
They also have a Business Intelligence Edition that's just Server Cal. And then you have the standard edition that you can get in server client access license or up per core.
Okay, so focus on enterprise.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Which, if you license per physical core, mm-hmm. is unlimited virtualization. Correct.
You have to license every core on the box.
Physical machine.
Yes, and then you have unlimited virtualization.
Okay, and that is or is not a software assurance right?
No, that is
that's a
licensing right, not a software assurance right. That's a licensing right. Was that the distinction you needed?
Yeah. I can tell you a SQL Server standard, a new SQL that my company is application mobility for VM running SQL standard that wasn't possible before. So I know that's an SA benefit that was enabled 1.12.
Yeah, the license mobility, though, that is, I want to make sure we're clear here, license mobility, the be able to move that license around, is a software assurance benefit. So I want to make sure that we're very clear.
Application mobility is different than license mobility, right?
Right.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
I appreciate your taking stuff from the PhD level down to the master's level.
Yeah.
Do you have anything in place for the high school student?
Yeah.
Because what I'm having trouble with is compliance with my developers and executives that don't understand MSDN. And I sent them a white paper, which was great, but they won't read that.
Right.
So I basically had to pull out a couple of the examples that you had and said, you know, this is what it means.
Right, right.
So do you have anything in place where it's more pictures, less words, clearer examples?
Yeah. So let me comment on that from an approach point of view. What we're trying to do is come out with we call them like one pagers. We're trying to come out with more one pagers.
Okay, that'll work.
And like it's oddly, they're actually surprisingly hard for us to write because they need to be still accurate.
I actually ended up using salesman's battle cards to make the explanation.
Interesting.
Because we have access to that to a partnership, so the salesman battle cards have most of what you need.
Well, indeed, because we do the battle cards too.
Yeah,
and we could use that battle card format because it's dense, right? You can pack a lot of.
Yeah, it worked out really well.
Got the quadrants, all right.
Especially for the execs, because they understood that level of information.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the feedback.
I have a scenario question. So I have an ESS cluster comprised of 10, 12 cores processors. That means it has 120 cores in that cluster. I installed SQL 2012 on top of that cluster. And the database is given 4 cores. So how many cores I have to buy for the SQL 2012 licenses Enterprise Edition?
Okay, so did you catch that?
I didn't catch that. No, I didn't catch that.
Can
we take that one offline, okay. and we'll just kind of figure it out, put it on a piece of paper, and we can tell you exactly, you know, what licensing is going to be required for that. Okay.
We'll come.
I can't do math in my head.
Come by the come by the Connect Zone. We're down on the Connect Zone.
Calculators, right?
So if we can transition Office that's on-prem in the EA today to Office 365,
Is
it per device or per user?
Per user.
So if you're, of course, on-prem, it's per device.
Correct.
So if you have shared workstations.
Yeah, so no, you make an important point. From a budget, you know, from a math point of view on the budget, it's going to be more and more important to, and especially for the CALs as well, right, depending what type of CAL you use, you're tracking whether you want to be device-based, which, you know, shared devices like terminals, you know, or your PCs where you've got 3 or 4 people, like shift workers, yeah, device-based licensing is probably still going to work out the cheapest. But user-based licensing is what most people want nowadays in terms of, you know, when you've got people running around with phones or tablets. But you're absolutely right. And, like, what's new in the EA, I kind of hinted at it without being explicit, but, like, it used to be, outside of CALS, you know, basically a device-based desktop EA. Now, you know, we're for Office subscription, you know, it's user-based. And that trend about having more and more user-based licensing options, I'm not in any way saying we're going to take device-based away. We're not. But the idea of, you know, having more and more options around user-based stuff for the device proliferation side of the house, you can expect to see a whole lot more of that in the next 6 months.
So if you move to Office 365, do you have to move to per user?
Yeah, because basically, I mean, it's no more or less simple than you're signing up. Mark Croft is a user with this subscription,
right,
whether it's K1 or E4. And that's literally a per user choice.
Right, and Mark, as a user of that, can use that Office 365 on up to 5 different devices.
Yeah.
Okay. And your licensing, whoever your partner is, if you're a customer, if you have a partner, the licensing specialist in the partners or Microsoft licensing specialist have a calculation to get you from a device based to the user based scenario. So, you know, that's all can be taken care of. So.
I don't know if anyone saw what people are thinking about on any more questions. If you read the Windows 8 blog, there's a licensing blog, just one of them today. There's going to be more, but there's just one today that basically lets you know we're going to have a companion device license, which is essentially still have this idea of a device license on the primary PC, the same way it's always been from a desktop licensing EA point of view, but there'll be a subscription offering that basically means, you know, you can take that Windows license, you know, either through VDA or through Windows to go across another up to 4 devices, which is, if you like, the Windows version of the same approach.
You know, that's been out there about a month.
It has.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, there'll be more coming out over time as release gets closer, but that one's, you know, and there's no pricing on that right now, so it's a little bit, you can't work out how much you'd use it, but it'll get clearer. And again, all I'm pointing to there is a trend of, like, even for the operating system, trying to get a cross-device approach to this. Multi-device, I should say.
I have a follow-up question, but I'm going to do it privately.
Okay. All right, well, I think the doors have been opened, which is probably symbolizing something. But again, thank you all very much for coming to this. I appreciate it. Cheers.